Behind him were the fluttering banners of the kingdom, all the duchies from Cridy in the west to Ran in the east. Colgan noticed his former student's far-off gaze and tapped him on the shoulder with the long staff he was holding.
"Are you all right?"
Pug turned. "I'm fine. I was just a little overwhelmed for a moment, engulfed in memories. It seems strange to see this day, in a way. Both sides of the war were bitter enemies, and yet I have ties with both lands. I find I have feelings I've yet to explore." Colgan smiled.
"There will be much time for introspection later. Perhaps Tully and I can offer some aid."
The old cleric had accompanied Arutha on his brutal ride, not wishing to miss the peace meeting. The 14 days in the saddle had taken a toll, however, and now he lay ill in Liam's tent. It had taken a command from Liam to keep him there, for he had been determined to accompany the royal party. The Serrani herald reached a place before Liam. He bowed low, then said something in Serrani. Pug rode forward to translate. "He says, His Most Imperial Majesty Ichindar, 91 times Emperor, Light of Heaven, and ruler of all the nations of Suranuani, sends greetings to his brother monarch, His Most Royal Highness Prince Liam, ruler of the lands known as the Kingdom. Will the prince accept his invitation to join with him at the center of the valley?" Liam said, "Tell him that I return his greetings and will be pleased to meet with him at the appointed place." Pug translated, with the appropriate Serrani formality, and the herald bowed low and returned to his own lines. They could see the imperial litter being carried forward. Liam signalled that his escort should accompany him, and they rode out to meet the Emperor in the center of the valley floor. Pug, Colgan, and Lorry rode with the honor escort. Meacham waited with the soldiers. The kingdom horsemen reached the designated place first, and waited while the imperial retinue approached. The litter was borne on the backs of 20 slaves, chosen for their uniformity in height and appearance. Their thick muscles bunched under the strain of carrying the heavy, gold-encrusted litter. Gauzy white curtains hung from gold-inlaid wooden supports, decorated with gems of great value and beauty. The rare metal and gems caught the sun's rays and glittered brightly. Behind the litter marched representatives of the most powerful families in the empire, clan war chiefs. There were 5 of them, one for each family eligible to elect a new warlord. The litter was lowered, and Ichindar, Emperor of the Nations of Suranuani, stepped out. He was dressed in golden armor, its value immeasurable by Serrani standards. Upon his head was a crested helm, covered in the same metal. He walked over to Liam, who had dismounted to meet him. Pug, who was to translate, dismounted and walked to stand to one side of the 2 rulers. The Emperor nodded curtly to him. Liam and Ichindar studied one another, and both seemed surprised at the other's youthfulness. Ichindar was only 3 years older than the new heir. Liam began by welcoming the Emperor with friendship and the hope of peace. Ichindar responded in kind. Then the Light of Heaven stepped forward and extended his right hand. "I understand this is your custom?" Liam took the hand of the Emperor of Suranuani. Suddenly the tension broke, and cheers went up from both sides of the valley. The 2 young monarchs were smiling, and the handshake was vigorous and firm. Liam said, "May this be the beginning of a lasting peace for our 2 nations." Ichindar answered, "Peace is a new thing to Suranuani, but I trust we will learn quickly. My high council is divided over my actions. I hope the fruits of trade and the prosperity gained by learning from one another will unify attitudes."
"That is my wish also,"
said Liam. To mark the truce, I have ordered a gift prepared for you. He signalled, and a soldier trotted out from the kingdom lines, leading a beautiful black war horse behind. A black saddle set with gold was upon its back, and from the saddle horn hung a broadsword with a jewelled scabbard and hilt. Ichinda regarded the horse with a little scepticism, but was awed by the workmanship of the sword. He hefted the great blade and said, "You honour me, Prince Liam." Ichinda turned to one of his escorts who ordered a chest carried forward. Two slaves set it before the emperor. It was carved Nagagi wood, finished to a deep and beautiful shine. Scrollwork surrounded bas-relief carvings of Surani animals and plants. Each had been cleverly stained in lighter and darker tones, in nearly lifelike detail. In itself, it was a fine gift, but when the lid was thrown back, a pile of the finest cut stones, all larger than a man's thumb, glistened in the sun. The emperor said, "I would have difficulty justifying reparation to the High Council, and my position with them is not the best at present, but a gift to mark the occasion they cannot fault. I hope this will repair some of the destruction my nation has caused." Liam bowed slightly. "You are generous, and I thank you. Will you join me for refreshments?" The emperor nodded, and Liam gave a command for a pavilion to be erected. A dozen soldiers galloped forward and dismounted. Several carried poles and bolts of material. In short order, a large, open-sided pavilion was erected. Chairs and a table were set up under the covering. Other soldiers brought wine and food and placed them upon the table. Pug pulled out a large cushioned chair for the emperor, as Arutha did for his brother. The two rulers sat, and Ichinda said, "This is quite a bit more comfortable than my throne. I must have a cushion made." Wine was poured, and Liam and the emperor toasted each other. Then a toast to peace was offered. Everyone present drank it. Ichinda turned to Pug. "Great one. It seems that this meeting will prove more salubrious to those around than our last." Pug bowed. "I trust so, Your Imperial Majesty. I hope I am forgiven my disruption of the Imperial Games." The Emperor frowned. "Disruption? It was closer to destruction." Pug translated for the others while Ichinda smiled ruefully in appreciation. "This Great One has done many innovative things in my empire. I fear we will not see the end of his handiwork long after his name is forgotten. Still, that is a thing of the past. Let us concern ourselves with the future." The honored guests from both camps stood in the pavilion as the two monarchs began their discussion of the best way to establish relationships between the two worlds. Thomas watched the pavilion. Kaelin and Dolgan waited on either side. Behind them, more than 2,000 elves and dwarves stood ready. They had entered the valley through the North Pass, moving by the kingdom forces that were gathered. They had circled around the clearing, gathering in the woods to the west, where they were accorded a clear view of the proceeding. Thomas said to both his comrades, "I see little to indicate trickery." A second dwarf, Hartham of Stone Mountain, walked over to them.
"Aye, Elfling. All looks peaceful enough, in spite of the sorcerer's warning."
Abruptly there was a heat shimmer across the field, as if their vision swam and flickered. Then Thomas and the others could see Surani soldiers drawing weapons. Thomas turned to those behind and said, "Be ready." A kingdom soldier rode up to the pavilion. The Surani lords looked at him with distrust, for so far the only soldiers who neared the pavilion were those serving refreshments.
"Your Highness," he shouted. "Something strange is occurring."
"What?" said Liam, disturbed at the man's excitement.
From our position, we can see figures moving through the woods to the west.
Liam rose and saw figures near the edge of the trees. After a moment, while Pug translated the exchange for the Emperor, Liam said,
That would be the dwarves and elves.
He turned to Ichinda.
I sent word to the Elf Queen and the dwarven war leaders of the peace. They must be now approaching.
The Emperor came over to Liam and studied the woods.
Why are they remaining in the trees? Why do they stay hidden?
Liam turned to the horsemen.
Ride and bid those in the trees join us.
The guard obeyed. When he was halfway to the woods, a shout went up from the trees, and green-clad elves and armored dwarves came running forward. Battle chants and cries filled the air. Ichinda looked at the onrushing figures in confusion. Several of his companions drew weapons. A soldier from the Serrani lines dashed to the pavilion and cried,
Majesty, we are undone! It is a trap!
Every Serrani backed away, swords drawn. Ichinda shouted,
Is this how you treat for peace? Mouthing pledges while you plot treachery?
Liam didn't understand his words, but the tone made the meaning clear. He gripped Pug's arm and said,
Tell him I know nothing of this.
Pug tried to raise his voice over the commotion in the pavilion, but the Serrani nobles were backing away, surrounding the light of heaven, while soldiers were rushing forward from the Serrani lines to join in protecting Ichinda.
Liam shouted, Back! Back to our lines!
As the Serrani soldiers approached, the Midkemians quickly mounted. Pug heard Ichinda's voice carrying over the noise.
Treacherous one! You show your true nature! Never will Suranuani deal with those without honor! We will grind your kingdom into dust!
Sounds of fighting erupted as the elves and dwarves clashed with the Serrani soldiers. Liam and the others raced back to their own soldiers, who sat waiting to join the fight. As Liam reined up, Lord Brukhall said,
Shall we advance, Highness?
Liam shook his head.
I will not be a party to treachery.
He regarded the scene before him. The elves and dwarves were pushing the Serrani back toward the rift machine. The Emperor and his guards were circling, avoiding the fighting, keeping the 1,000 honor guards between the attackers and themselves. Runners could be seen disappearing into the rift. A moment later, Serrani soldiers erupted from the rift. They rushed forward to engage the attackers. The collapsing Serrani line held, then started to push the elves and dwarves back. Arutha moved his horse next to Liam's.
Liam, we must attack. Soon the elves and the dwarves will be overwhelmed. There are 10,000 more Serrani on the other side of that rift, only a step away. If you ever hope to end this bloody war, we must capture and hold that machine.
Pug forced his own horse to the other side of Liam's mount.
Liam, he shouted, you must do as Arutha says.
Doubt still held the young heir. Pug raised his voice even louder.
Understand this. For 9 years you faced only a part of the might within the Empire, only those soldiers belonging to the clans of the war party. Until now you had many hidden allies, blocking a major effort against the kingdom. But now this betrayal has inflamed the one man who can command unquestioned obedience from all the clans of the Empire. Ichinda can order every clan of Suranuani to marshal. You've never faced more than 30,000 warriors along all fronts. By tomorrow, those 30,000 can be back in this valley. In a week, double again that number. Liam, you have no idea how vast his powers are. Within a year, he can send 1,000,000 men and 1,000 magicians against us. You must act!
Liam sat stiffly, the bitterness of the moment clearly showing in his expression.
Can you aid us?
I may, should you open a path for me to reach the machine, but I don't know if I have the ability to shut off the rift. Other powers I have, but Even if I overcame my conditioning and could oppose the Empire and I killed every man on this field, it would avail little, for a greater host would still be but a step away.
Liam gave a curt nod. Slowly he faced Arutha.
Send gallopers to the north and south passes. Call all the armies of the kingdom to arms.
Arutha wheeled and shouted the order, and riders sped away toward both passes. Liam looked back toward Pug.
If you can help, do so. But not until the way is safe. You are the only master of your arts upon this world.
Indicating Lorry, Meacham and Colgan, he said,
keep them from the fighting as well, for they have no part in it. Stay back, and should we fail, use your arts to go to Krondor. Carline and Anita must be taken to the east, to their grand uncle Caldric, for the west will surely be Surani.
He drew his sword and gave the order to advance. The 1,000 horsemen lumbered forward, a moving wall of steel gaining momentum as officers shouted orders, keeping the columns orderly. Then Liam signaled the charge, and the lines became ragged as horsemen rushed across the clearing toward the Surani. The Surani heard the rumbling of cavalry, and many fell back from the elves and dwarves to form a shield wall. Pug, Lorry, Meacham, and Colgan watched while the kingdom horsemen collided with it. Horses and men screamed as long spears bent and broke. The shield wall wavered as men died, but others leaped forward to take their places, and the kingdom host was turned back. Liam reformed his troops and charged again, this time breaking through the shields. Pug could see the right side of the Surani forces rolled back before the horsemen, but the Emperor himself rallied the balance of his soldiers, and the center of the line held. Even at this distance, Pug could see the Surani nobles entreating the Emperor to flee. The Emperor stood with sword drawn, shouting orders. He refused to leave the field. He was forming his men into a tight circle, protecting the rift machine, so others could return to this valley from Kellywan. He looked and saw that soldiers were now rushing forth from the rift in greater numbers. Soon there would be enough of them to destroy the king's small force. A faint trembling could be felt beneath his feet. Then one of the Surani lords pointed behind the Emperor. Echinda saw hundreds of horsemen erupting from the trees to the north. The northern cavalry units were the first to answer Liam's call. The Emperor directed newly arriving soldiers to the north line to meet the new threat. A shout from the left caused him to turn. A tall warrior, clad in white and gold, was cutting a swath through the Surani guards, heading straight for the light of heaven. All the Surani lords rushed to cut him off. A clan force leader stood nearby. He raced to the Emperor and shouted, "Your Majesty, you must leave! We can hold only a short while. If you are lost, the Empire is without a heart, and the gods will turn their faces from us." The Emperor tried to push past him as the golden white giant cut down another Surani lord. The officer said, "May heaven understand," and struck Echinda across the back of the head with the flat of his sword. The Emperor crumpled to the ground, and the force leader shouted for soldiers to carry him through the rift.
"The Emperor is overcome! Take him to safety!"
Without question, the soldiers picked up the supreme ruler and conveyed him to the machine. A strike leader rushed to the force leader's side, shouting,
"Sir, all our lords have been killed!"
The force leader saw that the tall warrior was being forced back by the sheer number of Surani soldiers intercepting him. But not until after he had butchered every senior war chief who had accompanied the Emperor. A quick glance informed the force leader the Emperor was near safety, as the guards carrying Echinda disappeared from view at the far side of the rift. More soldiers came streaming through from the near side of the rift. Seeing no more time to waste, the force leader said,
"I will act as force commander. You are acting sub-commander.
More men to the north!
The man rushed off to place more men along the north line as the cavalry from the north pass bore down in a mad gallop. The attackers from the north hit the Surani position with a thunderous crash. The hastily erected shield wall wavered, but finally held. The force commander looked about and prayed they could hold until sufficient reinforcements arrived. Pug and his three companions could see the northern elements of the kingdom army hit the shield wall. Spears shattered and horses fell, while screaming men were trampled underfoot. The wall still held, and the kingdom forces withdrew to reform for another charge. Liam's command was being pushed back, and he ordered a withdrawal so that he could coordinate his attack with the one from the north. The elves and dwarves under Thomas were among the Surani to the west and were causing them the most difficulty, though they also were being slowly repulsed. As the horsemen pulled back, the Surani's attention was turned to the elves and dwarves. Those behind the north and south shield positions left their posts to lend support to their comrades on the west flank. Seeing this, Meacham observed,
"If the elves don't withdraw, the Surani will overwhelm them."
As if he had been heard, the four observers could see the western confrontation broken off. Elves and dwarves retreated under cover of elven bowmen. Culgan said to Pug,
"This respite serves to strengthen the Surani."
They could see the flood of Surani soldiers coming through the rift.
"If Liam does not reach the machine after the next charge, the Surani will gain in strength as we weaken."
Pug said, "He can bottle them up only if he can station bowmen at the entrance to the rift. A steady stream of bowfire through it should keep them back long enough to erect some sort of barrier. Then we might be able to render it inoperative."
Lorry said, "Can't it be destroyed?"
"The other way is fraught with risk."
Pug sat quietly for a moment.
"I don't know if my powers are sufficient to destroy the rift, but I think it is time to try."
As he started to spur his horse, a voice behind rang out,
"No!"
They all turned and saw a brown-clad figure standing, staff in hand, where no one had been a moment earlier.
"Even your powers are not equal to the task, Great One."
"Macross!"
Culgan exclaimed. Macross smiled a bitter smile.
"As I foretold, I am here when the need is greatest, the hour most grave."
Pug said,
"What is to be done?"
"I will close the rift, but I have need of your aid."
He returned his attention to Culgan.
"I see you still have the staff I gave you. Good. Dismount."
Pug and Culgan got down from their mounts. Pug had forgotten that Colgan's ever-present staff had been the one Macross had given him. Macross went over to stand before Culgan.
"Plant the end of the staff firmly in the ground."
He turned and handed the staff he carried to Pug.
"This staff is twin to that one. Hold it tightly, and never for an instant release your hold, if you have any hope of surviving our task."
He regarded the conflict a short distance away.
"It is almost the appointed hour, but not quite. Listen carefully, for time grows short."
He looked at Pug, then Culgan.
"When this is all over, if the rift is destroyed, then return to my island. There you will find explanations for everything that has occurred, though perhaps not to your full satisfaction."
Again there was a bitter smile.
"Colon, if you have any hope of seeing your former pupil again, hold to that staff with all the strength you possess. Keep Pug in your mind, and never let the staff break contact with Midkemian soil. Is that understood?"
Culgan said,
"But what of yourself?"
Macross's tone was harsh.
My safety is my own concern. Trouble not yourself about me. My place in this drama was as foreordained as your own. Now watch.
They returned their attention to the battle. The northern elements of the Kingdom Army charged, and Liam and Thomas gave orders for their own units to join in the attack. The horsemen hit the shield walls again, and the Serrani lines broke. For a moment, the Kingdom cavalry was in command of the field, and the Serrani collapsed inward. Then, as the advantage of the charge was offset by the milling swarm of foot soldiers who cut horses out from under riders, or conspired to pull horsemen to the ground, the balance returned. A sea of battling figures could be seen around the rift machine. There was no organization and little discipline. Men fought to survive, not for any gain in position. The sounds of metal clashing against hardened wood and hides rang through the valley. Everywhere the onlookers turned their attention, blood flowed, and the sound of death was terrible. Macross looked at Pug and said,
Now is the time. Walk with me.
Pug walked behind the brown-robed sorcerer. He held tightly to Macross's staff, for he believed the sorcerer's warning that it was his only hope of surviving what lay before them. They walked through the battle, as if some agent were protecting them. Several times a soldier turned to strike, only to be intercepted by one from the other side. Horses would be ready to trample them, only to wheel away at the last instant. It was as if a path opened before them, and closed behind. They approached what was left of the Serrani line. A shield holder fell to a horseman's lance. They stepped over the fallen body and entered the small, relatively calm circle around the rift. Soldiers were still pouring forth from the rift, and the circle was widening. Macross and Pug mounted the platform to the far side of the rift, while soldiers rushed out of the near side. The soldiers seemed oblivious to the two magicians. Macross stepped into the void of the rift. Pug entered behind. Instead of the expected emergence into Kellywan, they hung in a colorless place. There was little sensation of direction. The place was without light, but not dark, only various shades of gray. Pug found himself alone, with only the sound of his heart beating in his ear to reassure him that existence had not ceased. Softly he said, Macross? Macross's voice came to him.
Here, Pug.
I cannot see you. A chuckle was heard.
No, for there is no light. What you see is a faint illusion granted by my art, so you might have some point of reference here. Without ample preparation, even your vaunted powers would avail you little in keeping your sanity, Pug. Simply accept that the human mind is poorly equipped to deal with this place.
What is this place?
This is the place between. Here the gods struggled during the Chaos Wars, and here we shall do our work.
Men are dying, Macross. We should hurry.
Here there is no time, Pug. Relative to those who battle, we are frozen in an instant. We could grow old and die, and not a full second would pass upon the battlefield. But we must still be quickly about our task. Even I could not do this without spending a bit of energy to keep us alive. Energy we'll need to finish this business. We dare not tarry long, but there are a few things I would say to you. I have waited a long while for you to fulfill your promise. I could not close the rift without your aid.
Pug spoke, though his senses rebelled at the grey landscape on all sides and the disembodied voice that seemed a short distance away from him.
It was you who turned the rift aside. When the stranger came and the enemy sought to reclaim the nations of Suranwani, surely that took awesome power.
He could hear the sorcerer chuckle.
You remember that detail? Well, I was younger then.
As if he knew it was an unsatisfactory answer, Macross added,
Then the rift was a wild thing, created by the wills of those who stood atop the towers of the assembly. I only turned it to another place, balking the enemy's design, and that at great risk. Now this rift is a controlled thing, firmly anchored in Keliwan, managed by a machine. That which controls it, many intricate spells, keeping it in harmony with Midkemia, keeps me from manipulating it. All I may do is end it, but for that I need help. Before we end this particular drama, I would say this to you. You will understand most things after you reach my island. But one thing above all I ask of you to bear in mind as you hear my message. Please remember I did what I did because it was my fate. I would ask you to think of me kindly.
While he could not see the sorcerer, Pug felt his presence close by. He started to speak, but was interrupted by Macross's voice.
When I am done, use whatever shred of energy you have left to will yourself to Kulkan. The staff will aid you, but you must bend all your efforts to that task. If you fail, you will perish.
It was Macross's second warning, and Pug felt dread for the first time in years.
What of yourself?
Take care of yourself, Pug. I have other concerns.
There came a sensation of change, as if the fabric of nothingness around them was subtly altering. Macross said,
At my command, you must unleash the full fury of your power. All that you did at the Imperial Games was but a shadow of what you must do now.
You know of that?
Again there was a chuckle.
I was there, though my seat was poor compared to your own. I must admit it was quite impressive. Even I would have been hard-pressed to provide as spectacular a show. Now, there is no more time. Await my command. Then let your power flow toward me.
Pug said nothing. He could feel the sorcerer's presence before him, as if it were being defined for him by Macross. Again he felt the sensation of twisting change around him. Suddenly there was a blinding light, then darkness. An instant later, all around him erupted in mad displays of energy, much like those he witnessed in the rift of the Golden Bridge. On every side, blinding colors exploded, primal forces he did not recognize.
Now, Pug! Came Macross's cry.
Pug bent his will to the task. He reached down into the deepest recesses of his being. From there, he brought forth all he could of the magic power he had gained from two worlds. Forces sufficient to destroy mountains, move rivers from their courses, and level cities to rubble, all these he focused. Then, like casting away something painful to hold, he directed all this energy toward where he sensed the sorcerer to be. There came an unimaginable, insane explosion of those forces, and the primal matter of time and space screamed in protest at its presence. Pug could feel it writhe and twist around him, as if the fundamental universe were trying to cast the invaders out. Then there came a sudden release, and they were expelled.
Pug found himself floating in total blackness. He drifted, numb and without coherent thought. His mind was unable to accept what he had sensed, and he was close to losing consciousness. He felt his fingers go lax, and the staff began to slip from his hand. He clutched spasmodically at it from blind instinct. He then felt a faint tugging. His mind resisted the cool blackness that was trying to overtake him, and he tried to remember something. It was growing cold around him, and he could feel his lungs burning for lack of air. He tried to remember something once more, but it would not come to him. Then he felt the tug again, and a faint but familiar voice seemed to sound close by. "Colgan?" he said weakly, and let the darkness take him. The Serrani force commander was alive. He wondered at that miracle as he saw those around him who lay dead before the rift machine. The explosion a minute before had killed hundreds, and others lay dazed a little way beyond. He rose and took stock of what was occurring. The terrible destruction of the rift had not served to aid the kingdom forces either. Riders frantically tried to control near hysterical horses, and other mounts could be seen running madly away, their riders thrown from their backs. All about, confusion reigned. But those at the edge of the conflict were less dazed than the others, and the fighting was resuming. There was little hope, now that Kellywan was cut off to them, either of aid or of a safe return. Still, they numbered only slightly less than the enemy, and there was a chance that the field could yet be theirs. There might be time to worry about the rift later. Abruptly, the sounds of fighting stopped as the kingdom forces withdrew. The force commander looked about and, still seeing no officer of greater rank, started shouting orders to ready the shield wall for another assault. The kingdom forces were slowly regrouping. They did not attack, but took up position opposite the Serrani. The force commander waited while his soldiers made ready the lines. On all sides, kingdom horsemen stood ready, but still they did not come. Slowly the tension grew. The force commander ordered a platform raised. Four Serrani grabbed a shield. He stood upon it, and they lifted him up. His eyes widened. They have reinforcements. Far to the south, he could see the advancing columns of the South Pass Kingdom forces. They had been farther removed from the parley site and were only now reaching the battlefield. A shout from the opposite direction caused him to look to the north. Lines of the Kingdom infantry were advancing from the trees. Again, he turned his attention southward and strained his eyes. In the distant haze, he could see the signs of a large force of infantry following behind the cavalry. The officer ordered the shield lowered, and his subcommander said, "What is it?" "Their entire army is in the field." He swallowed hard, the usual Serrani impassivity broken. "Mother of gods, there must be 30,000 of them." "Then we shall give them a battle worthy of a ballad before we die," said the subcommander. The force commander looked about him. On all sides stood bleeding, wounded, and dazed soldiers. Of the kingdom armies arrayed against them, only a third had fought. Fully 20,000 rested soldiers approached 4,000 Serrani, half of them unable to fight at their normal efficiency. The force commander shook his head. "There will be no fighting. We are cut off from home, perhaps for all time. There is no purpose." He stepped past his startled subcommander and walked beyond the shield wall. Raising both hands above his head in the sign of parley, he walked toward Liam slowly, dreading the moment when he would be the first Serrani officer in living memory to surrender his forces. It took only a matter of minutes to reach the prince. He removed his helm and knelt. He looked up at the tall, golden-haired prince of the kingdom and said, "Lord Liam, into your care I give my men. Will you accept surrender?"
Liam nodded. Yes, Kasumi. I will accept surrender.
Darkness. Then a gathering greyness. Pug forced his heavy eyelids open. Above him was the familiar face of Colgan. The face of his old teacher split into a wide smile.
It is good to see you are with us again. We did not know if you were really alive. Your body was so cold to the touch. Can you sit up?
Pug took the offered arm and found that Meacham knelt next to him, aiding him to sit up. He could feel the cold leave his limbs as the bright sunlight warmed his body. He sat still for a moment, then said,
I think I will live.
As he said it, he could feel strength returning to him. After a moment, he felt able to stand and did so. Around him, he could see the assembled armies of the kingdom.
What has happened?
Laurie said,
The rift is destroyed, and the Serrani who remain have surrendered. The war is over.
Pug felt too weak for emotion. He looked at the faces of those around him and could see deep relief in their eyes. Suddenly, Colgan engulfed him in a hug.
You risked your life to end this madness. It is your victory as much as any man's.
Pug stood quietly, then stepped away from his former master.
It is Macross who ended the war. Did he return?
No, only you, and as soon as you were here, both of the staffs disappeared. There is no sign of him.
Pug shook his head, clearing away the fogginess.
What now?
Meacham looked over his shoulder.
It might be wise if you joined Liam. There seems to be some commotion taking place.
Laurie and Colgan assisted Pug, for he was still weak from his ordeal within the rift. They walked to where Liam, Arutha, Kasumi, and the assembled kingdom nobles stood waiting. Across the field they could see the elves and dwarves approaching, with the northern kingdom forces behind. Pug was surprised to see the older son of the Shinzawe present, for he had thought him back on Kellywan. He looked a figure of dejection, standing without weapon or helm, and with head downcast, so he didn't see Pug and the others arrive. Pug turned his attention to the elves and dwarves. Four figures walked at their head. Two he recognized, Dolgan and Kaelin. There was another dwarf with them who was unknown to the magician. As the four reached a place before the prince, Pug realized that the tall warrior in white and gold was his boyhood friend. He stood speechless, amazed at the change in Thomas, for his old friend was now a towering figure who resembled an elf as much as a human. Liam was too exhausted for outrage. He looked at the war leader of Elvander and said quietly,
What cause did you have to attack, Thomas?
The prince consort of the elves said,
The Serrani drew weapons, Liam. They were ready to attack the pavilion. Could you not see?
In spite of his fatigue, Liam's voice rose.
I saw only your host attack a conference of peace. I saw nothing in the Serrani camp that was untoward.
Kasumi raised his head.
Your Highness, on my word, we drew weapons only when we were set upon by those.
He pointed at Thomas's forces. Liam turned his attention back to Thomas.
Did I not send word that there was to be a truce and a peace?
Aye, answered Dolgan. I was there when the sorcerer brought word.
Sorcerer, said Liam.
He turned and shouted,
Laurie, I would have words with you.
Laurie stepped forward and said,
Highness, did you carry word to the Elf Queen as I bid?
On my honour, I spoke with the Elf Queen herself.
Thomas looked Liam in the eye, head tilted back, an expression of defiance upon his face.
And I swear that I have never seen that man before this moment. Word of the planned Serrani treachery was carried to us by Macross.
Colgan and Pug came forward.
Your Highness, said Colgan, if the sorcerer's hand is in this, and it has been in everything else, it seems, then it may be best to unravel this mystery at leisure.
Liam still fumed, but Arutha said,
Let it lie. We can sort out this mess back at the camp.
Liam gave a curt nod. We returned to camp. The heir turned to Brakhall and said, Form a proper escort for the prisoners and bring them along. He then looked at Thomas.
You I would also have in my tent when we return. There is much we must explain.
Thomas agreed, though he did not look happy at the prospect. Liam shouted,
We return to camp at once. Give the order.
Kingdom officers rode toward their companies, and the order was given. Thomas turned away and found a stranger standing next to him. He looked at the smiling face. Then Dolgan said,
Are you blind, boy? Can't you recognize your own boyhood companion?
Thomas looked at Pug as the exhausted magician moved close.
Pug?
He said softly. Then he reached out and embraced his once-lost foster brother.
Pug!
They stood together quietly, amid the clamour of armies on the move, both with tears upon their faces. Colgan placed his hands upon both men's shoulders.
Come, we must return. There is much to speak of, and thank the gods, there is now ample time to do so.
The camp was in full celebration. After more than 9 years, the soldiers of the kingdom knew they would not have to risk death or injury tomorrow. Songs rang out from around campfires, and laughter came from all quarters. It mattered little to most that others lay wounded in tents, tended by the priests, and that some would not live to see the first day of peace, or taste the fruits of victory. All the celebrants knew was that they were among the living, and they revelled in the fact. Later there would be time for mourning lost comrades. Now they drank in life. Within Liam's tent, things were more subdued. Colgan had given a great deal of thought to the day's occurrences as they had ridden back. By the time they had reached the tent, the magician from Crydee had pieced together a rough picture of what had occurred. He had presented his opinion to those assembled there, and was now finishing.
It would seem, then, said Colgan, that Macross intended for the rift to be closed. Everything points to the terrible duplicity as having been used for that purpose.
Liam sat with Arutha and Tully by his side.
I still can't understand what would possess him to undertake such grave measures. Today's conflict cost over 2,000 lives.
Pug spoke up. I suspect we may find the answer to that and other questions when we reach his island. Until then, I don't think we can begin to guess. Liam sighed. He said to Thomas,
At least I am convinced that you acted in good faith. I am pleased. It would have been a hard thing to imagine you responsible for all the carnage today.
Thomas held a wine cup, from which he sipped. I also am pleased that we have no cause for contention, but I feel ill-used in this matter.
As were we all,
echoed Hartham and Dolgan. Caelin said,
It is likely that we have all played a part in some scheme of the Black Ones. Perhaps it is as Pug has said, and we shall learn the truth at Sorcerer's Isle. But I, for one, resent this bloody business.
Liam looked to where Kasumi sat stiffly, eyes forward, seemingly oblivious to what was being said around him.
Kasumi, Liam said, what am I to do with you and your men?
Kasumi's eyes came into focus at mention of his name. He said,
Your Highness, I know something of your ways, for Lorry has taught me much. But I am still Serani. In our land, the officers would be put to death,
and the men enslaved. I may not advise you in this matter. I do not know what is the usual method of dealing with war prisoners in your world.
His tone was flat, without emotion. Liam was about to say something, but a signal from Pug silenced him. There was something the magician wanted to say.
Kasumi?
Yes, great one. Thomas looked surprised at the honorific, but said nothing. There had been time only for the most superficial exchange of histories between the two boyhood friends as they had returned to the camp.
What would you have done if you had not surrendered to the prince's custody?
We would have fought to the death, great one.
Pug nodded.
I understand. Then you are responsible for preserving the lives of nearly 4,000 of your men, and thousands more kingdom soldiers?
Kasumi's expression softened, revealing his shame.
I have been among your people, great one. I may have forgotten my Surani training. I have brought dishonor upon my house. When the prince has disposed of my men, I will ask permission to take my own life, though it may be too much of an honor for him to grant.
Rukal and others looked shocked at this. Liam showed no expression, but simply said,
You have earned no dishonor. You would have aided no cause in dying. There ceased to be one when the rift was destroyed.
Kasumi said,
It is our way.
Liam said, No longer. This is now your homeland, for you have no other. What Colgan and Pug have said about rifts makes it unlikely you shall ever return to Saranawani.
Here you will remain, and it is my intention to see that prospect turn to good advantage for us all.
A faint flicker of hope entered Kasumi's eyes. The heir turned toward Lord Brukal and said,
My Lord Duke of Yabon, how do you judge the Surani soldiers?
The old Duke smiled.
Among the finest I have ever beheld.
Kasumi showed a little pride at the remark.
They match the Dark Brotherhood for ferocity and are of nobler nature. They are as disciplined as Keshian dog soldiers, and have the stamina of Natalie's rangers. On the whole, they are without question superior soldiers.
Would an army of such provide additional security for our troubled northern borders? Rukal smiled.
The Lamushan garrison was among the hardest hit during the war. They would be a valuable addition there.
The Earl of Lamut echoed his duke's comment. Liam turned to Kasumi.
Would you still take your life if your men could remain free men and soldiers?
The Shinzawe son said,
How is that possible, Your Highness?
If you and your men will swear loyalty to the crown, I will place you under the command of the Earl of Lamut. You will be both freemen and citizens, and will be given the charge to defend our northern border against the enemies of humanity who abide in the Northlands.
Kasumi sat silently, unsure of what to say. Laurie stepped over to Kasumi and said,
There is no dishonor.
Kasumi's face broke into an expression of open relief.
I accept, as I am sure my men will.
He paused. Then added,
We came as an honor guard for the Emperor. From what I have heard said here, we have been used by this sorcerer as much as anyone. I would not have any more blood spilled on his account. I thank your Highness.
Lord Vandross said,
I think a knight captaincy would be proper for the leader of nearly 4,000. Do you agree, my Lord Duke?
Rukal nodded in agreement, and Vandross said,
Come, Captain, we should speak with your new command.
Kasumi rose, bowed to Liam, and left with the Earl of Lamut. Arutha touched his brother on the shoulder. Liam turned his head, and the prince said,
Enough of matters of state. It is time to celebrate the ending of the war. Liam smiled.
True.
He turned to Pug. Magician, run and fetch your lovely wife and fine son. I would have things that smack of home and family about.
Thomas looked at Pug.
Wife? Son? What is this?
Pug laughed.
There is much to talk about. We can catch up with each other after I bring my family.
He made his way to his own tent, where Katala was telling William a story. They both jumped up and ran to him, for they had not seen him since his return. He had sent a soldier with the news that he was well but busy with the prince.
Katala, Liam would like you to join us for dinner.
William tugged at his father's robe.
I want to come too, Papa.
Pug picked up his son.
You too, William.
The celebration within the tent was of a quieter sort than the one taking place outside. Still, they had been entertained by Laurie's ballads and had enjoyed the exhilaration of knowing that peace had finally come. The food was the same campfare as before, but somehow it tasted better. A great deal of wine had also added to the festive mood. Liam sat with a cup of wine in his hand. Around the tent, the others were engaged in quiet conversation. The air was a little drunk, and none grudged him that relief, for he had endured much in the last month. Colgan, Tully, and Arutha, who knew him best, understood that Liam was thinking of his father, who, but for a Serrani arrow, would now be sitting here with them. With the responsibility of first the war, then the succession thrust upon him, Liam had not found time for mourning as his brother had. Now he was fully feeling the loss. Tully stood. In a loud voice he said,
I am tired, Your Highness. Have I your leave to withdraw?
Liam smiled at his old teacher.
Of course. Good night, Tully.
The others in the tent quickly followed suit and took leave of the heir. Outside the pavilion, the guests bade each other good night. Laurie, Colgan, Meacham, and the dwarves also left, leaving Pug and his family standing with Kaelin and Thomas. The childhood friends had spent the evening exchanging histories of the last 9 years. Each was equally amazed at the other's story. Pug had expressed interest in the Dragon Lord's magic, as had Colgan. They expressed an interest in visiting the Dragon's Hall someday. Dolgan allowed he would be willing to guide them, should they wish to make the journey. Now the reawakened friendship glowed within the two young men, though they understood it was not what it had once been, for there had been many and great changes in both. As much as by the dragon armor and the black robe, this point was dramatized by the presence of William and Katala. Katala had found the dwarves and elves fascinating. William had found everything fascinating, especially the dwarves, and now lay asleep in his mother's arms. Of Thomas, she didn't know what to make. He resembled Kaelin in many ways, but still looked a great deal like the other men in camp. Thomas regarded the sleeping boy.
He has his mother's looks, but there is enough devil in him to put me in mind of another boy I knew.
Pug smiled at that. His life will be far calmer, I hope. Arutha left his brother's tent and came to join them. He stood beside the two boys who had ridden with him to the mines of Mac Mordane Cadal so many years ago.
I should probably not say this, but years ago, when you first came to visit my father, Kaelin, two boys were overheard in conversation while they tussled in a hay wagon.
Thomas and Pug both looked at the prince uncomprehendingly.
You don't remember, do you? Arutha asked. A blonde, thin-ribbed lad was sitting atop a shorter boy, promising he would someday be a great warrior who would be welcomed in Elvander.
Pug and Thomas both laughed at that.
I remember, said Pug. And the other promised to become the greatest magician in the kingdom.
Katala said, Perhaps William will also grow up to realize his dream.
Arutha smiled with a wicked light in his eyes. Then watch him closely. We had a long chat before he went to sleep, and he told me he wanted to grow up to be a dwarf. All of them laughed, except Katala, who looked at her son for a moment with worry upon her face. But then she, too, joined in the merriment. Arutha and Kaelin bade the others good night, and Thomas said, I, too, will be to bed. Pug said, Will you come to Rillinon with us?
No, I may not. I would be with my lady. But when the child is born, you must guest with us, for there will be a great celebration.
They promised they would come.
Thomas said, We are for home in the morning. The dwarves will return to their villages, for there is much work to be done there. They have been overlong from their families. And with the return of Tholin's hammer, there is talk of a moot to name Dolgan king in the west.
Lowering his voice, he added, Though my old friend will most likely use that hammer on the first dwarf to openly suggest it in his presence. Placing his hand upon Pug's shoulder, he said,
It is well we both came through this. Even in the depths of my strange madness, I never forgot about